Hi, and welcome to another Revenue Hub podcast. We continue with our Who Are We series. Today we are joined by Jens Munk, who is co-founder and CEO of Pace. Welcome, Jens.
Hi, Trevor. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Nice to sit here with you today. Good to be face-to-face rather than just recording this remotely. Got a number of questions that we want to get through today. Really, this is, as we say, who are we? This is all about you, not me. So let's start off with the most obvious question, Pace. Who are they?
Yeah, so we're sitting here today. You're in our offices. Some context for the listener. We're in Shoreditch, quite close to Old Street Roundabout. These are offices just above us here. We have 30 people, most of whom engineers, so 20 engineers roughly, and 10 sales commercial people. And Pace is a new company, relatively new in the revenue management solution space.
How long have you been around?
We were started in 2017, early 2017. Mm-hmm. Actually, our third birthday a couple of weeks ago. So super excited about that. Thank you very much. Coincidentally, almost the same birthday as my son, who is three and a half. So
he was during
the paternity leave that this whole concept got off the ground. Exactly. We have set out to challenge lots of orthodoxies within the revenue management industries and have built a whole technology platform around that to kind of bring that to market.
Okay. To expand a little bit on that, when you talk about the challenge of the orthodoxies?
Yeah. So going back to when we got started, for us, these were, it was myself and two other co-founders who started Pace. Mm-hmm. We had all come from science and technology backgrounds as opposed to hospitality. And what we shared was an interest in pricing, okay, supply and demand, and AI, essentially machine learning solutions to that.
Yep.
And we were exploring different spaces in which we could apply our different skill sets and backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just incredibly surprised to learn that hospitality was, we had thought it was incredibly sophisticated from a pricing and revenue management perspective, which in some areas it is.
Yep.
But in other areas, it's still in its infancy. So two specific examples here, 90%, and this is a number that's quoted ad nauseum, but 90% of hotels essentially use Excel spreadsheets or their gut feel or their instinct to price or do revenue management. It's basically based on, very skillfully, but at the end of the day, with something that's very data-driven, it's hard to use only your gut feel or your skill.
2017, 2018, when you were exploring this market, 90%, no matter how sophisticated, was still using a Excel spreadsheet kind of process.
Exactly. And that remains the case today still. So, you know, we haven't yet made a huge dent in that, but we're on our way. So that's one big area where the best solutions in revenue management haven't really been democratized.
Okay.
We're still having conversations where it's he says, she says. You know, I'm of the opinion that we should be doing it in this way and somebody else has a different opinion.
Gotcha.
But there's not really any structured way of coming to an agreement of this is the best way. This is how you should be doing it. It's just opinions, essentially. And then we have the larger solutions, of mm-hmm. which there are a handful, perhaps, around the world. We could name them, but they're all of them mainly headquartered in the US.
Yep.
And they were really founded in, all of them, I would say, without exception, were founded in an era of decision support tools. And
okay,
I'll explain what I mean by that. So this was the 80s, 90s, and to some extent, noughties.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to think of, this is going back one level here, there's this concept which is very famous in the world of technology, which is software is eating the world.
Okay,
I don't know if you've come across that, but it's basically comes from Andreessen Horowitz, and they're talking about the different ways in which software and technology is penetrating all areas of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
But within software is eating the world, there are these two distinct phases, which many people talk about, and one of them is something called computerization, but where basically we're saying you have something that was previously purely manual and physical, and you computerize that. So instead of having pen and paper to write down your accounting, you're now doing your accounting on a computer. But other than that, nothing has really changed.
Got you.
So you make things digital and you put them online.
Yep.
So one example here is black cabs in London. You take Addison Lee and you essentially have phone, computer, and you have an online process for booking them.
Got you.
But other than that, nothing has really changed.
Yep.
But then you have this second wave, which is computation. And that's where you add things. And that's basically the Uber would be the equivalent here.
Understood.
So that's where you kind of add now decision making and automation and all of these kind of powerful things to it.
Yep.
So going back to the three large companies, yep, or the handful of companies,
yep,
they are basically founded in the era of decision support, which means you know, it's the same process of revenue management.
So they we've computerized
yeah, it, and we've added lots of complexity, but it's essentially the same thing, which is I, the human, make all the decisions, and I'm just saving myself time by using Excel or these tools.
Gotcha.
And we firmly believe that to kind of really build something new, you have to start from the concept and paradigm of what is the best solution. And that's what we've been building for ground up. Like, what's the right answer? Not what answer does the revenue manager think is right, mm-hmm, but what is actually the right answer? And they are different. And this is actually quite a controversial point in the world of revenue management.
Well, it's two philosophies, because
you either have predictability, which is you know what's going to happen because you basically told the machine what you wanted to do. Or you have the best performance. And you can't, and I really believe this, you cannot have both.
Gotcha.
Because we are not capable of putting all the rules in place for something to be the best performing. If I got into a self-driving car and I had to first program it, I would be super scared of being in that one.
You'd probably crash.
Exactly. And that's why the car companies, which were building for cruise control, etc., they were not the car companies which are building self-driving cars.
No.
So they're fundamentally different concepts. And we have from the beginning, what we're doing differently is we set out to generate the most amount of revenue for a hotel, regardless of whether somebody thinks that it makes sense or not. So one example is we don't look at what your comp set is doing as much. And we've looked at the data, but very often it doesn't generate the best outcome for you. And this is a typical example of this polemic in the industry, because you might have somebody who says, that doesn't make any sense. My hotel shouldn't be priced at this level.
So if you're not looking at the comp set, how are you, a change of philosophy here then? How are you saying that is the best result?
So one of the two guys that I co-founded this company with, he was a professor for 18 years in the US. Now he's a VP at United, so aviation. But he was a professor at MIT, then Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm. One of his students is leading the data science team at Uber.
Right.
So he's one of the people who have kind of come up with the concept of surge pricing, which has been written about, academic papers have been published. And he was actually part of the early conversations of PACE. Listen, one of my students went and did this thing at Uber.
Right.
I have some really important research in this space. Why don't we take some of this and build a company?
Okay.
But back to where we were, how does Uber know when to increase or decrease their prices?
Mm-hmm.
Do they look at Addison Lee? This is now a London reference for the listeners who aren't here. But do they look at other taxi companies around, yellow cabs in New York? No, they don't. They just look at supply and demand.
Okay.
They look at how many people are opening the app. They don't look at what the competition is doing. They don't even need to know if it's raining or not. The only thing they need to know is how many people want a taxi right now.
At that given time.
And the point is, so this is kind of a subtle point, but if another taxi company all of a sudden drop their prices, that will mean that fewer people want to book an Uber.
Yeah.
If it rains, that will mean that more people will open the app. So actually everything that's happening in the market, if it's relevant to you, you will see it in your booking data, but only if you're fast enough. So what used to happen is you would only look at your booking data every day or every few days.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have access to modern statistical tools. You would just go, oh, I have 7 on the books. For the previous period, I had 8.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not very sophisticated. What we do instead is we kind of timestamp all of your bookings, looking for patterns in them. And we update every hour. And we crunch all of that data. So that kind of means that we can see that your bookings are actually holding steady,
yep,
and the forecast is looking at you. It looks like you're going to be achieving your highest RevPAR ever for this day. So what do you care if the competition, if your comp set is dropping their prices? You don't need to worry if it's not having an impact on you. And that's the big kind of shift in mentality. And we hear this all the time from our customers who say, oh, you know, your algorithm or whatever you call it is braver than I am. I would have never dared stay on that price point. Or, you know, we had, this is funny, we had a testimonial video which we made 2 weeks ago, which we sadly can't release because it sounded, some people in the organization thought it sounded flippant.
Okay.
But what he was basically saying, this humble guy was saying, sometimes it doesn't make sense to me. We're not the Shangri-La. We're not, five star.
Yeah.
But people were booking and they were happy because they, and this is in Amsterdam, which is right. A very high demand city.
Yep.
But the point is you don't always know what price you can sell at, whether it's high or low.
Or not guesswork. You're using information.
Yeah.
To help you evaluate and make a decision.
Yeah.
What you're saying is there's other data, other information coming in more real time, more regularly, more quickly, that could make a decision better for you than looking at maybe slightly outdated information. I mean, where are you?
So there's that, but we were in the kind of area of talking of kind of secondary versus primary data.
Yeah.
And I think that's a specific one, but I guess the bigger point is that do we want to be challenged or by solutions? Should they be sophisticated enough to challenge us? Or do we want solutions which just replicate what we already know?
Back to your point.
And if we want predictability, then Excel is the best tool and other tools that are like Excel.
Yeah.
If we want to be challenged and have the best results, we will probably sometimes be surprised by what they tell us. It's the same whether you're playing, you know, chess at a high level.
Yeah.
The computer will tell you that there's this move.
This move.
That it's this move and you don't fully understand it, and later it makes sense. You know, that's kind of how new sophisticated solutions work. They will sometimes surprise you.
Like being at the casino where maybe the computer's telling you to hold, but you want to fold.
Yeah, exactly.
You just feel the odds are against you based on past experience. But then you're using your judgment, whereas all the data is telling you, no, hold on, you're still in the right place.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, that explains, because one of the questions I was going to ask you is, why did you get into this space? Because there are, as you've already mentioned, a number of RMS providers already out there. You need a certain type of client then, because you're coming at it with a very different philosophy. So you need to have someone who's thinking in a slightly different way in terms of saying, yeah, I get that. Because if we still think from the perspective of this is how I've done it, I want to computerize what I've done manually.
Yeah.
I don't want to shift too much. I'm still looking at my comp set and we're following the same rules that we always have done, but we get a computer to do it.
Yeah.
As you've clearly articulated, this is a very different approach to doing that.
Yeah.
So you need a certain type of client or a certain type of individual to recognize that there is a different approach. Is there a PACE customer?
Let me describe it in this way. We don't think that we are, we hope we're not a niche solution. What we hope, and we could be wrong, but what we hope is that we are doing something that will in 5 or 10 years be established as the way things are done.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think...
You have shifted the philosophy.
Well, I think us and lots of other companies.
Yes,
because I think
sure.
If we compare it to, and we can go into this, comparisons I think are useful with other industries. Advertising, I think, is a super relevant one.
Yeah.
Finance is another one that's very relevant. Mm-hmm. And they've come huge. If you think of Mad Men and kind of how advertising used to be done, these
absolutely.
Big agencies who knew everything about advertising, they would tell you whether you should put your money into newspapers or TV, etc., and which shows. And it was all a voodoo science, effectively.
Yeah.
And now it's being done with ROI and numbers.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different type of profile
absolutely.
Who is doing advertising.
Yeah.
And the same thing has happened in finance. It used to be whiny lunches, and now it's algorithms and computers trading.
Yeah, makes sense.
So if that's the case, then we're not so much looking for the kind of the quirky specific profiles, but we're looking for what's called the early adopters. So those who kind of see what we see, who see that the world is shifting and the world is changing. And I think that is for us the
kind
of
common trend.
That's the common trend. People who are often people who are curious and young at heart or young at mind.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really mean that they are young. We have customers from all over, from all different walks of kind of life, country, etc. But what they share is this nagging question, couldn't revenue management be done in a better way?
Understood.
I think that's the thing. I've been using pen and paper.
Yeah.
But many of them, when they speak to us, they go, well, of course it makes sense that there is a better way of forecasting than me just taking last month. Of course there is a better way. And of course I can learn something about my customers by trying different prices.
Yeah.
And that's the key thing, right? So my co-founder, I love this thing that he came up with in the early days. He said, pricing has two functions. Most people think it has one, which is to get your revenue.
Mm-hmm.
But it has two functions. The second function is to learn something about the price tolerance of your customers.
Gotcha.
If you always price a room at 100, you will know a lot about your customer, about demand,
yeah,
but only at 100.
Yeah.
You will have no clue what demand would be at 120 or 150 or 80 or 60. So it's that exploration which is super important. And almost all of our customers share this. They go, yeah, I would like to know more about what could be the case,
yes,
or what I could achieve, etc. Exactly.
So is that unique to how you do it? I mean, I'm sitting here listening. That would seem an obvious thing to do, but maybe that's why I'm sitting here talking with you, because
it would seem obvious. But and you will know the concept of unconstrained demand, mm-hmm, which has dominated the industry,
yeah,
since the 70s, 80s, when American Airlines came up with this. That concept, which is still being used today and is the norm, that is antithetical to understanding price sensitivity. Because what you're doing is you're saying, what is demand,
yeah,
at price zero?
Yeah.
And that's basically saying, what's demand at one price only?
Mm-hmm.
And then based on that, you will then price. But your price will impact the forecast again.
Yes.
And that's not taken into account.
It's like this continual loop.
Exactly. So yeah. Unconstrained demand is exactly saying,
yeah,
there is only one type of demand regardless of the price.
Yeah.
Everything we're doing is saying there is a different type of demand for every price.
Yeah, and
that's
if you were taking $10, $20 either side, well, you've got 20 different, you've got 100, 101, 102, 103, 20 different price points up to,
yeah,
120.
Yeah.
Each of those will be an indicator when you price it of the demand. And
yeah,
it's that learning from, that's what you're saying, yeah? It's the learning of that flexibility either side of that price point that you can then use that data to better predict going forward.
Yeah, exactly. And it's called in the data science industry reinforcement learning,
mm-hmm,
which is really a fancy way for saying that what you're doing has an impact on the world that you're exploring.
Yeah.
So you take one step forward, you're now in a different world, and you turn left, and you're now in a different room,
yeah,
and you have to continuously learn.
You analyze it.
Exactly.
You learn from it, and then you adapt.
So and we are one of the only solutions that we know in the revenue management solution space, which is focused on reinforcement learning. So every time we make a price change, we're evaluating what impact that price change has.
Interesting. So if you've got these clients that are these early adopters, as you say, that's probably the common characteristic between them. If I flip the table, and if I was talking to some of these early adopter clients, what would they tell me about Pace as a company to work with, as a group of individuals to be partnering with? How would they describe you?
I hope that they would describe it, and I've seen this, of course, as well. I'm just being. Just doing the Swedish, the Swedish humble thing here. No, but I've seen this a number of times that what they appreciate about us is our lack of pretense. I think,
okay,
in this industry that, yeah, we are very open about the fact that we're learning,
mm-hmm,
and we're trying to solve something.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had us feedback a number of times in meetings with large groups, small,
yeah,
hotels, mainly large groups in this context, who've,
okay,
said, I've never heard somebody talk about what they cannot do, as a revenue management solution. So we, you know, we will always come in and say, here are some of the things that we do incredibly well.
Yeah.
And here are the, some of the things that we do not do. And I think that's very untypical for the industry. I think the industry has had a lot of, we look at all the data sources in the world and we crunch all of it and we give you the right answer for everything.
Yeah.
So I think honesty is one of the things that we have become known for. And another one is that we're just dead focused on getting the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
Which means sometimes that we will have to kind of healthily disagree on, actually, no, when you ask us, can the algorithm always respond by dropping my price in the last 7 days, then that will with us lead to a conversation instead of, well, based on the data we're seeing, that will reduce your revenue. We just can't build a product for you which will not give you the optimal revenue. So I think honesty and a focus on getting the right answers, I think those are some of the most important things.
You said at the very outset that there's two different philosophies.
Yep.
And interesting discussions around those philosophies. One element that always comes to the forefront is, where does the human element sit within this?
Hmm.
How do you see the technology and the human working collaboratively?
Let I get this question a lot, and I think it's a really interesting one. So let me try to give us, as a starting point, two complete opposite ends of the spectrum. So I have spoken to, this is a real life example of a revenue manager who comes in every Monday and prints out a list of all the bookings that have come in over the weekend and starts attacking that list with a yellow marker and a pen. And those bookings may be for, there's one family from Switzerland who are staying 4 days on November 23rd. There's one booking from Thailand, which is for next year, just for one night, etc. Imagine a list of 20, 30.
Mm-hmm.
And going through all of those, trying to somehow find some pattern in them, spending 2 or 3 hours just looking through this list. So let's leave that there for a second and then talk about another example, which is somebody having a conversation between the sales team internally at the hotel and the digital marketing team and somebody who has the numbers from revenue management and trying to work out what's the best process for us to understand where are periods of weak demand so that we put our marketing budget to those periods of weak demand. This seems to me a perfect kind of two opposite ends of the spectrum for how you could spend your time.
Yeah.
Because one of them is something that just cannot be computerized or computated, whatever we call it, in any way, because it has to do with communication, speaking, getting a message, building a process, understanding what's important, prioritizing, all of those things which only we can do.
Yeah.
And then there's one activity on the other end, which is going through something which is just pure numbers and trying to basically be better than a calculator at that. And we are not better at calculators. There are so many studies which have shown that when it comes to evaluating risk, even personal finance, we will just make the wrong decision. If somebody says, would you rather have a 50% chance of, you know, £10 or a 1 in 1,000 chance of some huge number, we consistently go for the wrong one because we are emotional.
Yeah.
So I think that is for us always the starting point. Let's focus on what we are good at. And then unfortunately there are some people who enjoy some of the things that we are not very good at.
Yeah.
And I think historically that has not really worked out. If what we like to do is, for example, to put stamps on paper, you know, unfortunately those jobs eventually transition over to more strategic roles because the paperwork goes away and you know, calculators take over number work and accounting. But that's kind of where we think it is. I think that there are some tasks of revenue management which are just purely number exercises.
Yeah.
And let's just take forecasting. That's a great example. Forecasting and budget, are they the same or are they different? Well, forecasting is based on a series of numbers, what will the next five numbers be?
Yeah.
Based on half of your booking window, what will the second half of your booking window look like? There's no way any human, regardless of how smart, is going to be better at that than the best
absolutely
computer.
Yeah.
And we put amazingly, by the way, we've also put incredibly smart people on that who are theoretical physicists. That, so like they're collaborating with the machine anyway to kind of build that. But then there's budgeting, which is, what do we know about how much we're going to invest in marketing?
Yeah.
What do we know about how well we will sell? What do we know about the market? We know that Brexit has happened. That's budgeting.
Yeah.
And that's fundamentally different.
Yes.
And what do our owners want to achieve? What are the results that we have to achieve if we're not going to be yelled at?
Yeah.
And often these two are conflated. So we make a budget based on all of those very human things, and then we say that's what we will achieve.
Yes.
But that's different. That's a goal, right? And the forecast is what we think, where we actually will land.
Yeah.
And if we allow a computer to do the forecast and we build the budget, then our lives are much easier, because then we can start to, every day when we come in and with pace, the forecast automatically updates every hour without any input.
Okay.
Then we can start to look at, oh, there's a gap.
Yeah.
There's a gap here emerging. What are we going to do about this gap?
So it helps you to, So it helps you to spot where, as you say, the word gap is the key word, isn't it? It helps you to see the patterns.
Yeah.
See where a low period may be.
Yeah.
And then you have a commercial discussion about what are you going to do to ensure that there isn't a gap.
Exactly.
What does the future hold for Pace? Where are you guys going? What's the direction of travel? What's the new initiatives that are coming up? What should we be watching out for?
So what we actually will be releasing on, let me step back, I guess, and give you the big picture. So this year we grew, so we're still relatively young.
Mm-hmm.
We grew from 10 people to 30 people this year. And we have now grown to almost half a billion in what we call revenues under management, or gross booking value, which is something that the OTAs use as well.
Yes.
Which is effectively just the kind of the room revenue that we're seeing flowing through the system. Customers in 45 countries, more or less. I don't have the exact number. And that's actually properties. So customers in slightly fewer countries.
Yeah.
So huge growth this year with some great PMS partners and other players. Next year for us will be, we will be doing a fundraise.
Okay.
So we're taking in more capital at some point early next year, maybe sooner. And with that, we'll then be just doing not more of the same, but we will continue to strengthen what we know is working, which is just putting more very, very smart people onto this problem.
Yeah.
Because we now have the data, we have the infrastructure for those scientists to start to compare different models.
Mm-hmm.
So think of it like this. You have the smartest 10 people that we can find in a room who are all building models. And what they then can do is they can say, if we take the last 3 months of data from a particular property, now we can build the 5 smartest models and let them compete.
Yeah.
So our algorithms are competing in a Darwinian selection against each other, and we pick the best one. And then the next week or the next month, there will be another competition.
Yeah.
So we'll continue to accelerate away the results that we can give to hotels. So that's kind of on the science side, and on the product roadmap. This year we released automation with hourly updates. That was a big release for us in July. On next week, Monday, I hope could be a few days later, we will release the ability, which is sounds slightly in the weeds in detail, but it's kind of a big thing. We are allowing you to group inventory in a hospitality property in any way that you want, and we will then price that effectively as its own demand. So we'll pool all of those bookings and sales together, and we'll apply the algorithm to that.
Can you give an example?
Think of it a little bit like having the old bar rate for a hotel. You can now group together your two of your rooms, maybe the twin and the twin with the balcony. You can group them together so that the sales from them are treated by the algorithm as as one. They're basically effectively the same,
yeah,
but we can put a 20% differential between them.
Okay.
So you can basically, so you can have a completely, you can have a completely kind of flexible approach to what do you group together and how do you distinguish between them. And then the next step, which is super exciting for us, is to then add the ability to kind of allow those groups and types to float dynamically up and down. Right. And I can tell you more about that next time, but that's kind of the hard problem of, you may not want a more expensive room to ever be to ever be below one of your cheaper rooms. But when it is optimal, you do want them to be able to move in separate directions.
You want that elasticity in it, but you don't.
So that's super powerful. We also have some really exciting stuff for groups in the works. So to help the sales team when they're on the phone, evaluate what they should offer to groups. So there's a lot of stuff in the pipeline, which we're very excited about. Some of which will be actually done by WTM.
Okay.
So if anybody's there, they should come and speak to us, and we'll be able to demo this. We are. It's really fun. It's been a really great year.
Well, I'm conscious we've had over half an hour. And considering how much you've got on your plate, that's a lot of time for you to spend with us. So that's much appreciated. I think we've got a very great insight into what you guys are all about, where you're coming from. The differences are very apparent. I think also very exciting in terms of where you are looking to take the revenue management aspect. I'm conscious I don't always cover every piece of ground. Hopefully we've got a good overview here. But is there anything that we haven't touched on that in the last couple of minutes you'd like to just mention or highlight, or have we been fairly comprehensive?
I think we've covered some really good ground, really great questions. I think the closing thing for me is I and we are really excited about taking revenue management into revenue management 2.0, or we call it the revenue revolution. That there must be in this area, given everything else that's happened in the world since the 80s, 90s, there must be some new approaches which can be brought into revenue management to make it more effective. So whoever out there is interested in that and what revenue management will look like in 5 to 10 years, I hope they reach out and speak to us and share their views and hear ours.
We would certainly encourage them to. Thanks again. Great to speak with you.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
You too.